Am I not on?
Oh, no, it looks like good. Maybe we're good.
Okay. Bill, can you not see all of us?
No, I can see, I can't see any of you.
Oh, okay. We're all here.
Oh, sorry about that.
We can see you.
Can you see me? Good. You might want to close your eyes.
Am I facilitating this one?
Let me check. Who facilitated the last one?
Well, I facilitated last time, but I actually was unable to do the council, the whole council. So it's up to you, David, whatever you want to do.
Do you want to do this one, David, and then Irma can do the full council since that sort of the opposite happened last month?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, great to me. Let's do it.
Thank you. Let's
do it. All right. So do we have quorum? Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Let's see who we have represented. So we don't have membership needed. We have, we have quorum. We have the two committees and the co-chairs represented.
Great.
Here, I'm going to send you the full council agenda so that you can share that when it comes to that item.
Right, let's get started. Thanks for showing up, everybody. So let's do quick introductions. So let's start with my list here. First on the agenda here is Irma. Quick introduction.
Oh, sorry. Hi, Irma Parada, council co-chair.
Thank you. Bill?
Bill Bloom, HIV Health Services.
Okay, Richard.
Richard Sullivan, Council Co-Chair.
Great, Chuck.
Chuck Adams, Co-Chair, Council Affairs.
Okay, Thomas.
Thomas, double they, them pronouns, Government Co-Chair.
Great, and Council Staff, so I got Mark.
Mark Molnar, Council Staff.
Kira?
Kira, Council Staff.
And Dave?
David Jordan, Council Staff.
Okay, and then we have Public.
Bill Hirsch with the AIDS Legal Referral Panel and the HIV AIDS Provider Network.
Cool, thank you. Thank you, everyone. All right, so let's review and approve the draft agenda for today.
I think Kira or Dave will be pulling them.
Perfect. All right, so this is the agenda for today. I don't know if there's any additions or changes, but if there are none, we can approve through consensus. Any changes? No, right?
David.
I think the last change would be that one update is that the motion for increased funding is actually coming from membership.
Okay, great.
And I thought I saw that there was a vote for on CHEP and our update. Was that right?
Always noted as a vote, just in case.
I didn't know that, Mark. Thank you.
No worries.
Mm-hmm.
Great, awesome. So if there are no other changes, we can approve through consensus. Great, thank you. All right, next we have the draft minutes from the last meeting, from the July 21st steering agenda, steering meeting. If you can put them on the screen. Perfect. A really quick review. It was a pretty short meeting. So after a quick review, these went out also a while ago. If there are no changes or friendly amendments would like to approve these two consensus as well. Cool. Perfect. Thank you all. All right, so next we have any announcements from council members? All right, no announcements from staff. All right, moving on to public comment. Any public comment? No, Bill? Perfect. All right, next we have CHEP and HHS updates. Who wants to take it first?
Mr. Bloom, go for it.
We will have pretty much our standard update, unless I can get some very good information tomorrow, in which case I'll be updating about the additional funding for EHE for the HRSA HAB side. So it will either be this month or next month, but otherwise standard report.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Let me do a quick screen share. So monkeypox obviously, I can't screen share. I can present the data with regards to where we're at with monkeypox and what the department is doing. We finished a counselor training a couple weeks ago, so it's good to know that that's still in the mix. We actually included messaging around prevention of monkeypox within that training process. So trying to do what we can to engage community members. We've been using a process with regards to kind of a standard HIV outreach procedure called social network strategy. And this strategy basically kind of relies on community members to be individuals who are stakeholders in those communities to reach out to folks to gain access to HIV testing. And we're using a similar model for trying to reach particular populations who have lower rates of vaccination for monkeypox. And so that's going really well. Oscar Macias has been taking lead on that. And excited about the efforts, the fact that the vaccination rates are looking relatively in line with regards to the population size or population estimates in the city and county of San Francisco. I will stop there at this point.
Great. Any questions or comments about government updates? No. I have a question, and I think this is a question for Dave and for Mark. Should that monkeypox update just be kept as an update through CHEP? Or do you feel like it should be a line item, like its own agenda item? And Thomas also, any input on that? Not that I'm trying to put you on the spot to do more work. It's just, I don't know if we need to make that bold as in like we're responding to it versus it just being a part of an update. I'm comfortable with being an update from CHEP.
Yeah, that was how we left it. I think it was two co-chair meetings ago. Agreed to keep it as the ongoing update that Thomas would hold it for the time being, but if people feel like it is something that we want to separate out to emphasize its importance, and I guess it also we should ask Thomas how he feels about having maybe fielding two separate.
No, because I know there's also the advocacy group that's been going on, and so just want to make sure that we sort of give it enough spotlight to be like, look, we're being responsive to community, and also at the same time being like, and also we have other stuff we're good too, you know.
Yeah, I appreciate the sensitivity to the question, David, and I could go either way personally. I think from a optics perspective, however we can get it out there, specifically just because the disparity at this particular point is impacting the populations that this group is familiar with and knows. So for that rationale, I'd be okay with breaking it out. We're kind of going through the process of actually formally activating folks, and I've been activated to be director of the community efforts. So I say that with with regards to transparency and, you know, spreading that jam a little too thin once more. I'm excited to do it. And there's a lot going on and we're a really good spot. And I really encourage members to kind of either sign up for the newsletter that we are producing to make sure that we're outwardly facing and pushing out the information, and then our weekly huddle process with community so we can actually hear as well what the needs are from community around MPX. I'll stop there. So, and I'm malleable either way, but I think I would kind of put the energy to call it out a little bit more, at least to this particular, I think it's gonna be around for a minute is my thought, so.
I can add it to the full council agenda. I have it open right now. I could just add like a 15-minute update at the end of our meeting. How does that sound, Thomas?
Sounds great, Mark. Okay. And if we can use it as a time buffer, if we need that time to go into our HIV work, then we'll take it. No problem.
I'm adding it right now. You all will see this later on.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I kind of, yeah, anyways, it's been decided to move on. great, if there's no other comments or questions, we can move on to committee and work group updates. I think the community engagement did not meet, right? No, we did meet.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
Community engagement, yeah. I'm ready. Yeah, we met on the 3rd. So, yeah, thank you, David. Hi, everyone. We talked about increased funding. Mark laid down the scenarios for us. Well, I believe we took a vote on that, and I think it went proportional across all service categories, and that was to be moved on to the next committees, I believe. That decision was going to be put forward to the other committees. That's what we discussed there. We went over needs assessment, trans community. We discussed with that outreach, surveys. There's kind of been a lack of provider response, it was mentioned, but there's gonna be starting to do interviews soon. That's what was talked about in the needs assessment with trans community. Also the COLAs, we were talking about long-term survivors, and there was a discussion on the next COLA, focusing possibly around the Navigation Center. There was, I think Dave mentioned, there was some uncertainty about this. At this point, it just kind of things were up in the air on that. So we're gonna revisit that, I believe. Stephen Spanos did HCAP report. There was some focus on clients and the mental health services that were going on there. We had a scenario where someone misrepresented themselves, a case manager or something, that was discussed, and there was some outrage about that. Stephen was gonna get back to some people and let them know how they were progressing in that area. He talked about the RCFCIs also. There's some relocation issues still going on with that, with the moves, trouble with navigation support and in-house care upon the move. So that's an ongoing thing with Stephen, is the RCFCIs, and he's keeping us up to date on that at each update. So that's what happened at the community engagement. And thank you. And if you were gonna do work, if you were gonna do work groups, I was also going to jump in on that. People living with HIV, we had our initial meeting, and I think the only thing to go forward with is that we're going to be meeting again in September. We have a couple of things that we discussed, and we'll be building out on those, so I can report back more after our September meeting.
Great. Thanks, Richard. I was about to ask about that, too. Thank you. All right. Next on the list, we have Council Affairs.
Yeah, we discussed the increased funding scenario also and voted for proportional and moved it on. We went through the really good Aries report that we're going to be presented at the main meeting. And that was the two big items that we did. And I think that was all we discussed. Anything else, Mark? I don't think so.
That was it.
Go ahead, Dave.
All right, thank you. And then membership.
I can do membership.
There was a meeting, right? Okay.
If I don't think there's anyone else necessarily. Anyways, so I facilitated because the co-chairs were not available. We We had one renewal, which was Elaine Flores. She was approved for renewal. We did our sort of boilerplate demographic. Nothing had changed. We also went through the increased funding scenarios. That motion continued through, sort of unmodified. And we had two scheduled interviews. Unfortunately, one of the interviewees was not able to attend. We did interview Pedro Felix, who is a staff member at Alliance, who is looking to replace Jesse Murphy on the council. And he was approved for a vote by full council. We will be interviewing Manuel Vasquez from the Mayor's Office on Housing next month. He's the one who was not able to attend. I believe that's all.
Awesome. Great. Thank you. All right. So moving on to next agenda item is the Ryan White Part A increased funding scenario. Is that going to be Mark or Bill?
It'll be me. Just one moment. Let me pull up what I need. All right. So we received notification. We, meaning the grantee, HHS, received notification of an increase in our Ryan White Part A award for 22-23 and for our Minority Aid Initiative, MAI. So the increase for Ryan White was 2.4%, equaling about $354,167. The increase for Ryan White Part A within Minority Aids Initiative was a 4.25% increase. So the council, as it had determined last year, came back and did allocation scenario for increase. That was part of the what was approved last year, is to return and decide if, in the rare case, we do get an increase. And this is that rare case. So the conversation started at the Community Engagement Committee. I brought up the three different paths that the council could choose to go down. First path being they could choose to pick and choose amongst service categories based off on information they had learned during presentations past year. Second path would be to create a new project within one of those service categories, one or more. And the third path would be to do a proportional increase across all service categories per the recommendation from the actual service continuum. So the group discussed these potentials and determined that the most equitable would be for a proportional increase across all service categories. That was approved and then moved on from community engagement to council affairs. Council affairs did the same kind of review and also agreed. That then moved on to the membership committee, which also did the same, had the same topic of discussion and was also approved. So now it's here before you all. As a motion on the floor from membership, so it doesn't need to be moved or seconded. And so again, the motion on the floor would be to apply the increased funding dollars proportionally across all service categories. So we'll do discussion, then public comment, and then vote. Any discussion on this motion? Okay, any public comment on this motion? Yes, Bill.
Yeah. All right. Hi, folks. So I really appreciate the support that the various planning council committees have lent to this proposal. I just want to underscore the importance of finding some mechanism to address increased costs for service providers. This is a rare opportunity to actually use CARE dollars to do that. So thank you for your support, and I hope that you will approve this measure.
All right. So because this does, of course, involve dollars, I'll go around with a roll call vote. Irma Parada.
Yes.
Chuck Adams.
Yes.
Richard Sullivan.
Yes.
David Gonzalez.
Yes.
Thomas Noble and Bill Bloom.
What's the word?
Abstain.
Thank you.
Abstain.
I like
both, right. Both of us.
Two favorite cues.
Both of us.
All right. Your shared vote abstains. And so we will now pass this on to full council on Monday. Thanks, all.
Right, thank you. Awesome, great. So next we have term limits. So the next two agenda items, we have term limits and also government co-chair presentation. Do we want to wrap it up into one conversation? Do you want to split it up into two, like the way it's written now?
Those feel like two sort of separate things. They may need to be, they could be potentially approached in the same way, but they have sort of, they're separate factors involving both.
Right.
So.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Let's start with term limits. Who's presenting on that one?
I can just lead the conversation on that, and I assume Bill Bloom will likely want to interject a little bit as well. So the term limits conversation starts with our HRSA case officer sort of providing us with an update around sort of new guidance from HRSA, saying that there needs to be term limits for all council members, and that folks cannot have sort of indefinite terms or indefinitely sort of consecutive terms. There are in fact term limits for all council members. They are 2 years. Everyone has to renew every 2 years. So we don't need to put in that if people are comfortable with maintaining a 2-year term limit. Although, given that we are asking people to term off, you could potentially extend the term limits and then have a conversation around how many consecutive terms and how long potentially are you comfortable with folks reapplying, and what is the interval between when they can reapply. So does that make sense? Are there any questions?
Are we going to discuss it now, like what's worked, what's not? Because I would totally be for, I've always thought at 10 years everybody should take a 2-year break.
So I think HRSA is recommending something much shorter than 10 years.
I know they are.
Although they have sort of given us the at least the latitude that the term can begin sort of now, as opposed to sort of their current term, as opposed to sort of retroactively, meaning almost everyone or a great many of you would need to term off almost immediately, because you guys in your dedication have been on board for years and years and years. Some of you more than a decade, and a few more than almost closing in on 2 decades, I believe. So I'm sorry, my neighbors are repairing their garage and they just started sawing. If that's really loud for you guys, let me know. Bill, please.
Thank you, and I am in transit, so if there's a lot of background noise, I will be in a quiet space in a minute. Let me know as well. So just for you guys to know, there was some pushback on this that came out of a policy clarification notification, just the important role that long-term survivors and their accumulated knowledge bring. So you guys don't necessarily have to take action on this immediately, pending clarification from them. The second, I think they put it out perfectly, but there is also another option. You could allow people to do, you could set a limit by saying the number of consecutive renewals someone could do. And I could double check, Dave, but I understood it slightly differently. They weren't setting the clock based on now going forward. They were wanting us to look retrospectively. However, they are leaving it to locally to determine what's a reasonable amount of time. Other planning councils that I've spoken to, usually the rest is for a year, and oftentimes planning council members have chosen to attend as public. So to continue to be involved, they just have been involved but haven't voted.
Thanks, Bill. Sure. So another wrinkle to that was discussed. You know, a great many of those longest serving council members are in fact PLWH community members. And because work groups and committees have a little less formal system for voting and decision-making and have often included community members and subject matter experts as members of the group itself, we could potentially, you know, those folks who are sort of terming off so that we don't lose that sort of institutional knowledge, we could encourage them to continue attending something like PLWH advocacy group as a way of staying connected in their time as not official members, but still having a voice, because that work group does, you know, have a voice for sort of shaping a lot of the sort of direction of the council, or at least it has in the past when it was meeting more consistently. So that's one way to sort of maintain connection to our sort of veteran council members and avoid sort of losing them forever.
So my question is, from the last time I think we had a conversation, that there isn't really sort of like a time limit, I think, in terms of like, not time limit, I want to say there's not like an impending due date to sort of figure this out or to have like a response for the feds. And so is the conversation today more like, how do we want to approach this, or more like, let's figure out the direction we're going in and then put a time schedule on it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it did. So this and the other agenda item, both the sort of the sense that we were given was that they didn't have a hard deadline as to when this needed to take place, but that we needed to be showing a sort of good faith effort to working towards a solution to meet with the standard. That said, it sounds like, you know, this one, they have an expectation that we move forward more, you know, more decisively rather than the other. We can discuss the sort of co-chair representation one, which sounds like it is slightly more up in the air in some ways from the Hearst perspective. But that one sounds like there may be a little more wiggle room to sort of pause and reassess and get a sense of where people come down on that. As far as this one goes, I think that the action, so the conversation was, do you want to, at the co-chair meeting, should we sort of put together another PNP work group to have a conversation around term limits, what the interval is, and so forth? Or were people comfortable just doing that here within this group itself? So we've had, you know, it has been sort of laid out for you, the parameters. And I think it is kind of incumbent upon you guys to discuss how long those terms are and what that interval is, sort of at least that beginning of it. And like Bill has something to say.
Sure, I was just gonna add, my guess, actually, a slightly different take, Dave. It seems to me if you are paid for on the grant, so it's even more extensive than being the grantee, but if your position is funded by Ryan White Part A, they don't want you to be a voting member, period, or in a leadership thing, and I think that's going to stick. I think the big issue with this is that the CDC guidance is exact opposite of the HRSA-HAB guidance. So, you know, for those of us who have merged councils, which is kind of why we or you guys made the choice to have a co-chair vote, I think they do have to sort that out. But I'm guessing it's pretty legislatively prescripted. So I have the feeling at least HIV Health Services is going to have to migrate off as a leadership or a vote. And again, we're in a static period while they sort that out. From my perspective, you know, what we do in HIV health services to support the planning council is not going to change. We're going to continue to staff and support the work that you guys do and share the information. And if you want our opinion and ask us twice, we'll give it to you, hopefully in a respectful way. So I personally am not so concerned about it, but I think the feds have a wrinkle there they have to figure out. I don't know how quick it will be. My sense about the co-chair limits is that they just want to see something so it's not perpetual. So I think you guys could design something which has pretty long-term amount of time on it and then do a very, very gentle cycle off for some period of time, 6 months or a year. And I would suggest that you guys at least start thinking it through so that we are showing good faith efforts. And if you're able to get to a place where it can happen, that's great as well. I don't think either are completely going away, I guess is my tagline on this.
Yeah. So, sorry, if that was confusing for anyone who hasn't been part of this conversation previously, Bill sort of jumped to the next agenda item there as it sort of overlaps with this one. So we can discuss that sort of more in depth momentarily. And that's sort of around the co-chair, government co-chair representation issue. But as far as the term limits go, yes, it would be helpful if you guys would at least begin the conversation and we can sort of see how, what the next steps are around that and whether you want to take that to full council and have the conversation, or whether you want to sort of outline that and frame it up and how thoroughly you want to frame that up before presenting it to the rest of the full council. Mark?
So I feel like I heard that HRSA would not do this like in a retro fashion, that this would be starting from the development of the policy. Is that correct, Dave and co-chairs, whoever's been discussing this? Yeah. Okay.
Wait a second, Mark. I heard something different from our program officer, but it's not official. Whether it's retroactive or we start the clock now, but my sense from her is that it needed to be retroactive, but she's not the final opinionator on it. So I think that's still a question.
I think my own opinion on this, again, just my opinion, is that the council should in some ways like be subtly pushing back on this by not necessarily changing its entire way of doing term limits. This is a problem for not just the San Francisco EMA, it's a problem across the country. If it is retro in particular, that will remove a lot of long-term survivors, which obviously is a key population. Right now there's just such a gray area. I've heard different messaging, and at the meeting that I was at, I think organized by the CARE Coalition, I did a lot of strong pushback against this and actually the other one as well. And my voice was not alone. So I would certainly caution the council from like jumping in and just saying, okay, let's just make this like a term limit of like two term limits of 2 years each, 4 years. Cause then potentially that just moves a lot of people immediately off the council. And then we have a council of what, four people? So I just think that's a reality that will be confronted immediately if the council just does something without considering what the next steps could be. And so, I mean, I would say, like right now the actual bylaws state that the term limit is 2 years. So, I mean, you can add something on there. So like be added on there. Renewable up to 5 times. I mean, I get the fact that the person is like would like to say, okay, only maybe 2 or 3 times, but that's something like could be a dialogue that like the council can do things like push back. Other EMAs are pushing back on things. And so I would just strongly recommend that this council do what it can not to lose most of its members, in particular its PLWH.
All right, I have Richard.
Yeah, this is all new to me. I'm still relatively new on the council, about 3 years in. So I'm doing a lot of listening, but just off the top, it sounds like this, from what I know of the demographic of this group, this would gut the group. It would just gut it of population and like wisdom. I can see a little bit of what term limits they would want them for, but I'm not going to get into that here. My gut instinct here, it would take the guts out of this group. Like long-term wisdom and recruitment right now is a major problem as is. Do they understand that at the top levels? Those are the questions I have. I don't know what numbers we'd agree on because I'm new, but it just sounds like even if you're fielding a baseball team, this would take the top of our lineup out with no farm system in sight.
So we did give them that pushback, or at least we gave our case officer that pushback. Her recommendation was that we step up recruitment, which is, you know, a little infantilizing, but it's, you know, from their perspective, they have a directive that's coming from above them as well. So, but I hear you, Richard, for sure.
Hey, Chuck, I need to know I feel like you should participate in this conversation, like contribute. What do you think? Because we've been talking about this in like the culture meeting and you haven't been a part of that. And so I want to hear because you're 10 years and Mark's like, you know, you can apply 5 times at 2 year term limit, you know, to your term. Sounds like
now, we argued about what this when think? I was on the planning council in Santa Clara County. We had this same type of issue because we had a lot of people that were over 20 years on, and it was just we were starting to have a lot of community members starting to show up saying the same things getting passed all the time, but we want things different with new ideas. And so we started having a conflict there. So it was determined there that they would that's why they went for 10 years, 2 years break, and then you could apply again. And whether or not you got accepted was up to the council. But, you know, even the 2 years with the 4 years, 4 times, that's, I could see that. I mean, I have no issue with this. So it's just, I've just seen it both ways. It's just a city like San Francisco has had, is a major player. And so it's different in a lot of ways. So the kind of knowledge and stuff that's on this council is not in a lot of other places. That would be really hard to give up. And I think one thing I've noticed too from Santa Clara County was that once people rolled off, they intended to keep having input and stuff, but as time went on, it became less and less and less. And so and then when it came time where they could reapply, very few of them ever did. So there was just a lot of issues around this whole thing. And I was just I think they should at least give us to where it starts now, and if you have 4 years and then 2 year break or something, but it's just like, but that would affect everybody. So that's what's hard with this council in particular, is like everybody's been on for so long. I don't even know how long I've been on. It's over 4 years, 6 years. I don't know. It's been, time flies.
It was a last supper, Jack.
Yeah. So it was just like, from what I've seen from other places, it's this is, has always kind of been an underground issue. But I think San Francisco, because of its standing across the country, it is kind of different in that, like I said, the kind of expertise that's on this council, you're not going to find everywhere. So I don't, you know, that's why I said 10 years, because it's like, everybody can use a break after 10 years and 2 years and come back if you want. But like you said, recruiting is going to be very difficult, especially right now, for no matter what area it is.
Bill? Bill Pad? Bill Bloom?
Yeah, so, you know, it
one could adopt a strategy of not waiting for all the guidance to happen. So, you know, Mark has made the suggestion that, you know, some sort of renewal for a large period of terms that you guys determine is reasonable. And you could base it on the historic ability to refill vacant seats and the demand to get on the planning council. And they haven't determined it yet. So we as a planning council, you all could determine what that should be and also how long someone should rest, whether it's a year or 2 years. I think you could make the case for either of those things. And you also could move forward saying we want to start it now, the clock now, because they haven't, the official word hasn't been given. And then if they say, no, that's not how we want to do it, then we revisit it then. And, you know, Mark is suggesting maybe it's a pushback or whatever. I think we want to hear more about why they're thinking what they're thinking. So I'm thinking there's probably some advantage to the extent people are comfortable with moving forward with this in something, because then we've been responsive proactively and they've been slow to admit the guidance.
So I guess the question then is, for me at this point, is should this conversation stay here in the steering meeting level, or should we create a work group of how we want to sort of start, like, deciding what we want to do? Like, do we decide now about term limits and then see later on and how we want to implement that into bylaws and PMP, or do we want to sort of like say this is the intent and this is the timeline that we plan to sort of like decide this, and then have a response for HRSA? So I see Mark has his hand up.
I think work group can always be created, but judging from the amount of time it took for the PLWH work group to actually convene, and also judging from the fact that this meeting, when it was non-virtual, was a two-hour meeting, and it has been reduced often to an hour to an hour and a half, that this particular group certainly has the time as far as the bandwidth time-wise to do it. And also, this is the leadership group, and this is this and the following agenda item are pretty big things. Not really weighing in, but just wanted to point out the challenges in convening a work group and the virtues in keeping it here.
Yeah, Dave, and then Richard.
I think that we can also just apprise the full council of sort of the conversation that's happening here. Other folks can attend this meeting if it is something that they feel strongly about, so that we can just let people know this is agendized, this conversation is happening, maybe ongoing, and if you have strong feelings, you should attend to sort of add your voice to the discourse. Another sort of wrinkle that details of the conversation from the HRSA case officer coming back to me, one of the things that came up was a question of sort of how many folks are actually on the council. We have a max limit, but we don't have a minimum. It may be helpful in, you know, sort of having these conversations about terms, setting up a minimum, and also setting up sort of parameters around, like, how we manage sort of terming people off if we fall below our minimum, or if we look like we're falling below our minimum, to sort of make sure that we still have a functional council. Because if we are potentially going to term off a great deal of the council at some point in the near future, we should really be thinking about that. Because it was a massive council at the time of the merge, and we have steadily diminished through attrition in the last, 5 years? 5, 6 years? And I think that is a thing that we need to think about, like whether we can remain functional with the folks we have available.
Thank you. Richard.
Yeah, I like this as the group that can handle this instead of forming a work group. That just seems like starting something up again, and who knows what's going to happen with that. And this is leadership group, as Mark said. So I like it staying in-house in here. And then, like Dave said, maybe apprising the full council and others can come if it takes interest in them. But it can stay here, I believe. Also, I'm wondering, whoever talks to them, if it's Dave Jordan or whoever's speaking to the people that are asking about this, how much time do we have? What do we need to tell them to stall them, so to speak, so that we can work on this? You know what I mean? Like, what do they need to hear from us to appease them? And how much time does that give us to, like, if you told them the topic about minimums and, you know, give us some space, how much time can we buy from them so that we can work on it here as an ongoing matter?
Bill Bloom?
Yeah, a great question. And I think they understand. It's not the project officer we spoke with is not insensitive to it, and they get it. So I think the fact you guys are raising it and thinking it through, and also the fact we're waiting for more clarification from them. So I don't think you have a timeline yet. And I think maybe it is good to do a bit of a slower roll if you guys don't want to kind of preempt them. So I think just that you guys start something, there isn't a clock on it yet. And, you know, Dave and a co-chair join with the project officer on a monthly basis. So I would say if you want to slow roll it, probably wait for them to bring it up.
I think just by virtue of having this conversation, we are at least sort of meeting what was asked of us in the most recent meeting with the case officer, project officer, which was begin the conversation, good faith work towards the goal. So we're doing what was asked. We don't have to have an immediate response.
The comment I was going to make actually was, you know, I think you may have noticed, Dave, I think she was surprised by the size of our planning council. And historic, if I'm remembering correctly, and please correct me if I've got it wrong, you know, when we merged the planning council, we didn't want the kind of thing where we were kind of pushing members from one council or the other council off, because we had kind of an artificial number there. But, you know, this may be an opportunity to think through, you know, how hard it is to maintain this size in addition to the minimum. So maybe as well as looking at the lower bound, you all might want to rethink the upper bound. Because 40 people is a lot if the goal is to try and get close to that.
Bill, was she surprised at how our size, as far as like she thought we were larger, or she thought we would be smaller?
No. I think smaller, not larger. I think New York is bigger than us, but I think we're probably the second biggest.
Yeah, I think Atlanta might have the biggest, is my understanding. But yeah, I thought that we have a fairly large size, comparatively speaking. Okay, good. Just wanted to confirm that. Yeah, we're still.
Yeah, no, definitely on the larger side.
Yeah. 25 is not a bad number.
It's not. And, you know, the reason we chose 40, I think, was what I mentioned. And so it just, hard for planning council support. 50. Okay.
I think it's actually 49.
I'm looking at 49 right now. It says 50.
Oh, maybe we were 49. Maybe we have 49 total members grandfathering in, and we're like, let's just call it 50.
That was exactly
the day of the merge. And so we were just like, what is
exactly it?
One extra.
What is one more than what we have? And so, yeah.
Yeah.
I know when we were in UCHAP, it was a very big challenge for New York, because they when they merged with like term limits. And it was a challenge because they were like, oh, here is this brain trust that's working on this, you know, on moving something forward. And then, oh, I termed out, sorry. And then they had to like switch over quickly to see who was going to lead, the community members were going to lead like whatever like topic they're working on. And I was like, oh, wow, that is crazy. I was like, yeah. You only serve two years and then we're off. And I was like, that's not us. You know, and that was a challenge. It really was, because the folks that were like leading the community members or leading the charge on something were like, okay, done. It's over. Bye. Like trying to transfer all that knowledge base and all that like energy to somebody else who was just like, okay, I've been voted to do this now. It was a challenge for them as well. I don't know if they've changed that, but that was one of the biggest challenges with dealing with some of their leadership folks who are trying to like work on a project to get it forward.
Yeah, I bet. All right. At the last grantee conference I went to in person, which was at this point, 5 years ago, Atlanta had nearly 100 council members. Can you imagine that? The average that I remember, wow, this is like 5 years ago. So they might've changed. I imagine they might've changed since then, but I wasn't the only person shocked in that room because it seemed like the average council size was like a dozen people. And they were always trying to catch up. I mean, I don't think people saw 12 as like ideal, but it was always like, we just are not getting the people, we're not getting our consumers in kind of feeling.
Okay, so I'm trying to take a temperature of, so where we're at in this conversation, it seems like we're agreeing that this is the place, the steering committee is gonna be the place that we're going to be having the conversation. I propose that we somehow make an announcement, a full council meeting, and say that we want to have these conversations in steering. If they want to join, they can join. And I think for the next steering council meeting, we can put together like some ideas about what term limits could look like. And I think that's also a conversation that the PLWH work group can also have a conversation about. And seeing like really basing how we move forward on what the work group sort of feels is equitable for everyone. How does that sound to everyone here?
Good summary, David.
We have 2-3 members of people who are attending PLWH work group here. So if you guys are comfortable with that, I can plan on agendizing that for your meeting in September. One question, as far as agendizing it for steering the larger conversation, given that it is the steering meeting before the summit, do we want to push it out a month in case we have pressing things happening at steering, or do we feel like we can just, or do we want to think about extending steering an extra half an hour so we make sure we have time to for debate?
I think extending half hour is fine with me.
We may not use it, but it's, you know, it couldn't be, you know, we definitely don't want to feel like people are rushing because we haven't been thoughtful about leaving space for conversation.
But I also think that what we need is to look at our membership and say, if we do the 4 years, 8 years, how many members are going to be coming off? 10 years, how many are going to be coming off, just so we get some ideas of real numbers of who's going to be around and who wouldn't.
Okay, and we can also, you know, if you are interested in hearing, seeing what other jurisdictions are potentially doing, we can reach out to other jurisdictions and get a sense of what their term limits look like and what their max and minimum sizes are, just if you feel like comparison is helpful. Sometimes it is helpful.
Yeah, I was going to ask if we can do that and just see what some of their challenges and some of their sort of like strengths are with the way they've set up their councils like that. It'd be great.
It sounds like other jurisdictions are also facing this right now. Potentially, so there may be other people who want to join in this conversation.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I like what Chuck just said. Maybe if the next meeting or further out, someone could formulate a graph or a list like that would show me like who would be affected by this, like the numbers, who's affected, how many, when it would happen, like to give us some type of gauge about how maybe we can form what our limits would look like. I mean, we can work around that graph, like how, yeah, if that's not too difficult to do, do a, you know, a graph or a scale, who's affected, and you know, the numbers behind this.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I think we can ask for that. Just a visual, something that's something for us visual learners, that'd be great. Okay, is that it for this conversation before we move on to the next one about co-chairs? Government co-chairs, I should say. All right, so next topic is government co-chair presentation. So again, this is a conversation about sort of like HRSA, the way Bill Bloom described it earlier is like HRSA doesn't want anyone who's funded to be at the leadership level, specifically making decisions, whereas the CDC has something that's different. So Dave, can you give us sort of a summary about what the conversation would be for this one, for this topic?
Right. So the sort of point, the crux of the thing is that, as Bill stated earlier, and this sort of goes back to pre-merge. Before the merge, the Care Council specifically had provisions for not having government in leadership. Whereas the Prevention Council specifically had it written into their bylaws and it was part of the CDC guidance. I don't know where the CDC sits on that these days. I don't know if anything has changed. And so when the merge happened, that was actually one of the major points of contention between the two members of the, both bodies. And so it was settled in the PMP work group the merge leadership work group, that we would go with the prevention mode of having government co-chairs. And to that end, we have two government co-chairs who are who share a vote. Recently, HRSA has given guidance that they don't want anyone who is represents the grantee having. So, Bill, did you say not having a vote at all, or not having a vote as a co-chair or in leadership?
Not at all. No vote. Not actually being a member, and it's not specific. It's specific if your job position is funded by Ryan White Part A. So, it isn't the case for, but like, Gwen Smith, who works at a clinic, she's general fund, so she's fine. But she could have been funded, say, by Ryan White Part A, and she would also not be eligible. So, if you're being directly paid by the Ryan White Part A contract and you're part of the grantee, DPH, no, the answer is no.
Okay,
so this doesn't prevent Thomas from continuing because he's paid through CDC.
Right, but this does affect you, not just as a co-chair, but as a voting member.
And me.
As a voting member, correct.
And Irma, and I guess we have to look at who else potentially on the council we are losing, which is going to be a challenge because a lot of our mandated seats are potentially going to be falling into this bucket.
I would think that to be a part of the grantee it's pretty specific, and it would also not include like via MOU, like so Mary Lawrence Hicks, for example.
Correct. You know, Mark, I didn't dig down further on that question because I didn't want to necessarily immediately know the answer on that. But I think in the case where it's being mediated through an MOU or a contract, because some of them are in the contract, that's fine.
Yeah.
As long as someone, say, in her position abstains for any votes that, you know, that pertain to funding that might benefit her service category or her agency.
Oh, as always. Yeah.
Yeah. So that hasn't changed. So, and we could check. I mean, Irma is part of ambulatory care, but she's not the grantee herself. So a little bit will depend how they define the word grantee. But she's right to raise it, though. They haven't been very specific. So potentially Irma and myself. I think that's the only two at this point.
Okay, so.
I could take a look. If you want, Dave, if you want to send me the membership, I'll take a look and see where they're funded by, just to make sure.
Sure. So that does, until we sort of have an answer and understanding of how broadly that's going to be interpreted, that sort of grantee, it does still leave us with the idea that we are looking at a little bit of inequity around government leadership. And that's, you know, that is can be seen as problematic. I guess it depends on how people feel. So if Bill hadn't just sort of clarified some of that, you know, there would have been an option for maybe suggesting that we have two sort of ex officio members who are government, who maybe are not voting members, but are sort of there as guidance and informational resources. And, you know, honestly, Bill and Thomas and you know, Dean and Kevin before Bill largely abstained from a lot of these votes, making them functionally ex officio members already. So that can be part of the conversation. The conversation can also include, do we want to revisit having any government representation on leadership? And how, you know, how big a sticking point is that with our prevention folks? Will people, you know, feel the need to sort of push back around that? That is essentially the conversation. Does everybody sort of understand how that's been framed and what the sort of potential conflict looks like?
So for the sake of this meeting, if I want to ask, should this conversation hinge on what happens with the conversation between HRSA and CDC, or do we want to go forward and put forward something that is sort of a PM policy and procedure change or bylaw change?
So I don't think that there's a conversation between HRSA and CDC.
Oh, okay.
I think they're planning to consult, because this was raised by CARE. So, and also just a clarification, the initial feedback I got about an ex officio member was a thumbs down from the project officer. So there's like kind of an ex officio is a member but doesn't vote. The next step down for that would be like a partner. And so that's what we would be. And that's what's been suggested by HRSA Hab.
So that being said, I feel like we need to put a pin on this and again, with the term limit conversation, we should announce it to the full council meeting and then revisit this at the next meeting with these bullet points under this conversation, being like, well, we can't do ex officio. What do we want to do? Where do we move forward? How do we feel that like governments participate in these community planning meetings? Mark?
I wonder, I mean, there's a very easy way. I mean, that sounds like a good plan, of course, to keep the conversation going, but I wonder if there's just an easy way to respond right now, while also as far as the CARE grantee, and then put a pin on the, put a pin in Thomas as the discussion continues. Because Bill could be responsive to this and just literally resign immediately from the council. And Bill would then continue to come to this meeting. As in the past, HIV Health Services was always represented in the co-chair's meeting. And so Bill would continue to come to the co-chair's meeting, et cetera. And then we simply wait to hear back about guidance around Thomas. Like if they do decide to seek parity, then Thomas himself would also probably do the same thing, which would be resign immediately from the council, but still continue to attend co-chair meetings and hopefully this leadership team as well. Or perhaps like maybe this conversation will just be really crazy and they'll say, you know what, let's keep both of them, at which point Bill can come back on. But it seems like it to be responsive, because it does seem like this is something that is talked about with just as much frequency as the prior agenda item. I mean, that could be a feasible like two-part next step, one resignation and one kind of wait and see when it comes to Thomas. Not trying to push you out, Bill.
Oh no, I honestly don't have a lot of energy about it. You know, we have done it both ways. I really, even having a vote, my job is not to, I think there's the perception, which is really important, that, you know, we would unduly influence people, and that's not what I'm interested in doing. So I don't have energy about whether I have a vote or not, or even whether I'm a member or not. I just want to make sure you guys are supported. I'm happy to do it either way.
Any feedback from the rest of the council? Members present? Chuck, Richard, Irma? Okay. Mark, is your hand still up? Oh, okay. So, what does this mean for moving forward?
I think it would mean that Bill would resign. He would send an email to council staff notifying us of his resignation. And then we would continue to wait and see when it comes to Thomas, if he will be joining or not. I mean, it seems like they specifically don't want, I mean, they've made it clear. The only ambiguity is around people like Irma, for example. So I don't think we need to make any moves there. But I think when it's clear as far as like literal HIV health services grantee staff, like that to be responsive, that's what would happen. That I think the pieces of clarity, the pieces that need clarifying are around parity, around prevention, and around folks who are not necessarily a part of the like HIV health services administration. And why push the latter and the former, we don't know. So we can be responsive by Bill resigning and continuing to keep this as an agenda item at steering to see if we've heard back about the Thomas, about the CHEP, not say Thomas, about the prevention challenge.
Prevention.
Yeah, you know, and I just to be clear,
for Bill.
No, I was just going to say there's nothing been said about CDC prevention folks not being able to be in leadership. So that's never in question. And I mean, I suppose it could come up, but the reason that the whole issue with the CDC thing is you have two federal agencies saying the exact opposite things. And what does that mean for merge planning? So I am unhappy to resign because I don't want people to feel like I'm dumping you guys, because I love you all, but I can do it. But I guess I wonder that I think they're going to want to see the policy change too. So I think you guys still should think through what you want to do with your bylaws, with our bylaws.
It would require a bylaw change.
I think you still got to figure that piece out.
But I think to satisfy them immediately, your resignation certainly counts. And while we wait to see if CDC and HRSA truly do recognize the lack of parity here, if we hear that, we'll have to change the bylaws either way. But I don't think necessarily we should be doing successive bylaw changes. So I think I would recommend that you all hold off on changing the bylaws until you actually hear back from HRSA. And literally, like Dave and the co-chairs, whichever co-chairs and HHS can continually ask this of the HRSA project officer until the HRSA project officer says, it's just not happening. CDC is you know, they want the prevention chair to stay. At which point you can then do the bylaw change, of which one of the co-chairs will always be a prevention chair. It just seems like doing that first, when it might potentially change, is changing the bylaws again and again.
All right. Sounds good. So
also just a brief reminder, once you do decide to go whether into term limits or into government co-chair, just a reminder, it can't be done at the same meeting. A bylaw change does require a 30-day notice, and so we'd notice it. And so there definitely is time built in, like you're not going to immediately have a discussion and then vote.
Okay, great. So how are we going to announce this at the next meeting? Is it going to be like an agenda item? Is it going to be just like, hey, by the way, bill's out, or are we going to send an email out? What's going on? How are we going to communicate this?
One option, David, is I could communicate it in the HHS report and also just provide the rationale and kind of talk about it in terms of role and you know, share with you all that will not change, my commitment, our commitment to. Oops. I'm sorry. I think I was on mute there, David. What I was saying is one possibility is that I could announce it as part of my report for HIV Health Services if you guys like that.
Yeah, it's fine. I think also if some people have feelings, being able to sort of like manage and coordinate that sort of response, especially during the meeting, and then if anyone feels really sort of like, you know, sort of a little hot about it, they can always show up for the steering meeting next month, since it will be extended.
And we can always provide any kind of feedback we receive from the council to the monthly meeting with the HRSA project officer,
which I think
who actually may be changing yet again, just for you guys to know.
Yeah, so if folks feel a certain kind of way, it's important to share feedback.
Great.
Okay, so I will plan on agendizing this conversation ongoing until we have a something looking like a conclusion around parity or no. But in the meantime, it sounds like Bill is planning on resigning. And okay. So sounds like this might be a agenda item that doesn't necessarily have a whole lot of conversation around it until we hear back from our government overlords.
Yeah, I would recommend, Dave, that eventually, like say maybe in January, if we truly have never heard nothing about any kind of conversation about parity between them, then we just notice a bylaws change and then change it. It's a simple one.
Sure. Okay, that's fine. I will plan on adding that to the agenda or just leaving these two agenda items on a rolling basis.
Great. So just to keep in time with the agenda, next is the meeting evaluation from last full council meeting.
Let's see if I can share screen. Otherwise, I'll just read it. We'll see. Oh. Kira has disabled screen sharing. All right, so I will just read it. Kira,
we'll talk about screen.
Because we'll definitely need screen sharing for Monday, for sure, unless you want to do all of the Aries report yourself, which is a lot of screen sharing on your end. But we can talk about that. All right, so let me just read it to you. We had 12 respondents, which is sort of our average response rate. 100% of people agreed that the information received prior to the meeting prepared them for the meeting itself. 100% of people said the meeting was run efficiently by David Gonzalez. The comment there is it was well facilitated and the meeting had a good flow. Thanks, David. In the discussion during the meeting, 100% felt that their point of view was adequately expressed and understood. The one comment there was, NA, okay. The agenda was well planned, agrees 100% of the people. There were no comments. The Hep C micro-elimination update by Rachel Grinstein and Amina Habib was well prepared, 100% said yes. So the prevention megatrends presentation, again, 100% people said that was well prepared and relevant. And there were three comments. Tracy provided an amazing update in light of knowing it may be her last for the HCPC. Great presentation, but sad to see her moving on. Second comment, thank you for all of your service, Tracy. We all will miss you. And third comment was great, exclamation point, all caps. And then the last presentation was the HIV care megatrends presentation by Bill Bloom. 100% of the people said it was well-prepared and relevant to the HCPC. There was one comment, another great in all caps. And then what worked well for you during this meeting? What could have been improved? As far as what worked well, looks like taking a break worked well. All went well, period. And pace was great. 100% of people said that their needs as a council member were being met during this time. There were three comments, NA, period, and think it's working pretty well. The overall rating was a 9.6, which is obviously a good rating. And there you have it. Any questions on the evaluation? Any discussion?
Right. Okay. Great. Thank you. Fantastic. Now we have a next full council agenda. Voting on the agenda for next.
All right, Kira, if you could pull that up. Okay, as you'll see here, the first half of the meeting is various things led by various council members with our regular updates. We're going to have a two votes within the membership update, you know, the new member and the Elaine's renewal. We'll go over the motion that you all just approved this month, and then I will do my annual talks and presentations on eligibility criteria and definitions update. That's a vote, of course, as well as our mandated HRSA mandate review, which will, I feel like I've trimmed that down, or I can get through that 15 minutes. Then we'll have a break, and then we'll come back with our two presentations. I put in a lengthy amount of time for Maria, Beth, and Floor, because that's often a presentation that's just fascinating to folks, a lot of rich information. And then we have, to close us out, Thomas Noble will be providing monkeypox to all of us.
That sounded strange, but I think I get it.
All right. Is there a vote for this one? No, there isn't. Is there?
Just any updates or anything like that. Otherwise, if it all looks good to you, then that's what will be sent out by Kira, and you'll be looking forward to on Monday.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Mark. Yeah, I think it's, since we're all cool with that, that should be it for this meeting. See you all. Full council meeting. Is there anything else? Right. That's it.
Kira and Richard, can you both stay on just briefly?
Yes, thank you.
All right. Well, that'll be it for the steering meeting. Thanks, everyone, and see you all at the next full council meeting. Thanks
Bye,
again.
Bye, everyone. Bye, Irma.
Oh, Irma got a special goodbye. Okay.
Yeah.
hey, can you stop recording, Kira?